Today is Monday, February 16th, 2015, and while America and New York and the Eastern Seaboard is being bombarded by snow, we're only warned that there's going to be snow. It hasn't happened yet, but again, they said Wednesday, Thursday, I've read. All right, ready to roll. First of all, I want to make one correction. I mentioned that Rabbi Young came to Cleveland last week, and he said that he became rabbi of the Jewish Center. No, he became rabbi of Knesset Israel in Cleveland, which was an Orthodox synagogue. I don't want to go into more detail. There's a simple reason that I made the mistake when you speak and you're not reading from your notes, because what I was thinking of is that in Cleveland, there was the Cleveland Jewish Center, which was the source of great machloket. It had been Orthodox, and in came Solomon Goldman and turned it into a conservative temple. And I spoke about that when I spoke about Rabbi Young. I spoke about that when I spoke about Reb Lazer Silva, because he testified in court. The big battles were fought. And in my mind, I was thinking of Jewish Center, because when Rabbi Young came to New York, he came into the Jewish Center where Mordechai Kaplan was before him. The place was Orthodox. Mordechai Kaplan tried to turn it around. It was a similar story, but Young came in and saved the day. So in relation to Cleveland, I mentioned he was not rabbi. He was rabbi of an Orthodox shul in Cleveland for 2 years, and then he was called to the Jewish Center, which of course was a tremendous upgrade for him. I also want to mention David Newman sent me this information from Cleveland. In relation to my Sunday class, I was absolutely right that the Helmetzer Rebbe, who lived in Cleveland, he visited Cleveland in the 1980s. He had been in Cleveland, then he was in New York, he was a mull. He was not only a great expert in a riven, he was a great expert in mikvot. And here's his tombstone. What you can come up with from the internet is beyond words. And David Newman came up with a very fascinating article. I remember the machlokes, whether you can use tap water to kasher a mikvah. Can you use water from the city reservoir? The whole problem of the pipes and how it's arriving in Mayim Shuvim. And there's a whole article written. And the Helmetzer Rav was one of those that led the battle, and ultimately, I don't think there's a mikvah in the United States that uses regular tap water, lakshir mikvah. There are many ways to do it, rainwater, but the average you can use ice, that's what was used in Far Rockaway, snow that melted, etc. But very interesting material, and I thank David Newman. Regarding the pictures of Sarah Netanyahu, Yomo, who's quite brilliant but has to find himself, God should give him strength and health. He's in his early 30s, and if anyone knows of a shidduch for him, let me know. I'm gently trying to push him. He's a sweetheart and a big Talmud Chacham. So he looked at the children in this picture, and these children are Americans visiting. They are celebrating their bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah. They're at that age, and the prime minister and his wife came to visit them and gave chizuk, and that's why I praised Sarah Netanyahu, but Jomo's absolutely correct. It's not Israeli children, it's American children. That was Yachad, the Yomo? That was Yachad, this group? Well, what group is it from? High Lifeline, 1 second. High Lifeline, okay, that's another group. Also, I want to mention, I noticed someone sent me from the internet, they did a search on Malachim, and I see the question has come up on the internet, why Reb David Leibovich left Torah Vadas? And here, I'll only tell you what I believe to be the truth. I published this in Revel, and my source, I didn't live it, obviously, we're talking at a time before I was born, but I interviewed, when I was doing my research on Revel, I interviewed graduates of Torah Vadas who were there actually when Reb David Leibovich left. And the conclusion I reached, I see people have many theories, but I can only tell you what the conclusion I reached. I think I'm correct, I can't say for sure. But what I heard was Reb David Leibovich was a Slabodka. In Slabodka, he felt the Rebbe's role is not just to give his shirin gemara, but to give hashkafa, to give musa, to round it out and produce talmidim who are steeped in gadlat ha'adam. Mr. Mendelovich felt that a Rebbe should only teach gemara, and the hashkafa, the musa in Torah Vadas, is his responsibility. And Rav David Leibovich felt fenced in. And that's why he left and founded what later became known as Yeshivat Reb Yisrael Meir HaKohen. I don't know how many of you know that there was a whole tremendous in Torah, because popularly the yeshiva, the name Reb Yisrael Meir HaKohen, never caught on. You follow me, or if I said to you Reb Yisrael Meir HaKohen, do you know what I'm talking about? No, you don't know. It's the Chafetz Chaim. So the name never caught on. So popularly it was called Chafetz Chaim. When Reb Mendel Zaks came to America and established, he tried to establish the Chafetz Chaim. It's now called the Yeshiva Katana on the west side, and his children went into Muncie, and the grandchildren headed up today. So they claimed that they owned the name Chafetz Chaim. So there was a din Torah between, the Chafetz Chaim would have, I don't want to elaborate further. The Chafetz Chaim would be turning over, and you can finish the sentence, what went on, that there was a din Torah. There are other dinei Torahs now, I don't even talk about it, but that was the famous one. And the pshara was that the west side branch is called Chafetz Chaim, and the one in Forest Hills retains the name Reb Yisrael Meir HaKohen. So if you notice on their stationery, it says Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Meir HaKohen, but everyone until today calls it Chafetz Chaim. And no one can challenge it anymore. It's almost 100. It's a place 75, 80 years old. And, you know, the other Chafetz Chaim didn't take off, and that one today is a major institution. Okay, something else that came up that's very fascinating, that Mr. Mendelovich, if you recall, we spoke last week, and I'll pick up from last week's share, and I'm going to reanalyze part of it. But we spoke about the Malachim, what developed in America, these American kids already, the mid-1920s into the 1930s. They wanted more, they wanted more. There already were Torah Jews in America, there were Shemesh Shabbos Jews, and these kids wanted more. So they gathered around the Malach, Rav Levine, who was a Kohen. By the way, people did research and came up with more details on him. It turns out that the reason he was called Levine, his original name was Kohn. His brother was a rabbi in America by the name of Kohn. But in Russia, in order to avoid the draft, he made believe, like many Jews, he was an only son of a different family. So he took the name Levine, and he came to New York, he came to the Bronx, and lo and behold, he winds up, my father, as I mentioned, spent his formative years on 172nd and Washington Avenue. Hank Greenberg lived around the corner from my father, and the Malach was 169th on Washington Avenue, the Nisachari Shul. So Mr. Mendelovich got involved with the Malach. He wanted to learn Tanya with him, study Tanya. He was a Talmud of the Rashab, Reb Shalom Dovber, the fifth Rebbe. He knew the sixth Rebbe, Reb Yosef Yitzchak, and he became close to the Malach at a certain point in his life. Now, what's fascinating is when you look into the letters of the Munkacherav, and if you recall that letter to Mr. Shraga Feigelman, the Lubbish that I quoted to you last week, where the Munkacher rips apart Yeshiva University. So there's another letter written in 1936, not to Mr. Mendelovich, but to the administration of Torah Vadas. It's letter Kuf Nun Chet in Igrot Shapirim. Shapirim is Aramaic for good letters, beautiful letters. And these are the letters Shapirin. It's a play on Shapiro. Reb Chaim Lozer Shapiro, the Munkacher Rav. And here they ask him if they are allowed to teach Tanya in Torah Vadas. And that's very fascinating. Be interesting to know, did they actually teach? Why the question was asked? Was the administration, it's not addressed to Mr. Mendelovich, were they upset with Mr. Mendelovich because he was bringing in Tanya? And all I can theorize is that Litvakin were a bit frightened. Tanya, Mapitom Tanya in the yeshiva, which is supposed to be a continuation of the Litvishi yeshiva, particularly by the 1930s, where the Rabbi Revel brought the Meitshitit to America, and then the Soloveitchik family, and Torah Vadas was trying to emulate YU, and they brought in Rabbi Shlomo, Reb Shlomo Hyman, the Talmud of Nufak of Berech Be'alevovich, and Ma Pitom Tanya. And the Munkancher answers, absolutely, to teach Tanya, it's a sefer that gives Yiret Shemayim, will help them, and there's nothing wrong with teaching Tanya. Very interesting comment. Now, I also mentioned, in the course of the last week or two, I mentioned Rabbi, how I met in Florida, Rabbi Yisrael Edelman and his father, Rabbi David Edelman, had just died in his early 90s, and this Rabbi David Edelman, the Chabatnikim, the Rebbe Shaluach, to Springfield, Massachusetts, built the day school there, which still thrives until today. He was a very unique individual. And I have here the eulogy from the local newspaper. He left the legacy of over 250 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. One individual, a Chabatnik, many children, children continuing in the fashion of the father and grandfather, and take a look what one individual, one couple accomplished. It's over 250 direct descendants. All right, this is the secret of our survival. Now, I saw a very interesting suggestion, and I thank my Talmud Rabbi Aryeh Lieberman, who's a Chabadnik from the old school, and he quoted, he showed me online, someone made the suggestion, what does Rabbi Rakefin think of this? And I have to tell you, I've thought about it, and I buy it. And the suggestion is very simple. Well, we're talking about the Malachim in the 1920s, the 1930s, these malachim were seeking, searching, looking for something. They wanted more. Today, we can give our kids a lot more because you raise a kid in Israel, your kid goes to yeshiva, learns at yeshiva tichonit, the army, what he's going to do, how he's going to do the army. The kid's life is filled with meaning, a decent individual, a decent chinuch, Eretz Yisrael, Lam Yisrael, Lapi Torah Yisrael. It infuses him totally. But in the Gola, we're missing Am Yisrael to a certain degree. We're certainly missing Eretz Yisrael. So in the night that these kids were seeking more and more. So the suggestion has been made that on to 190 years later, we are seeing the same concept happening again in Yeshiva University, Neo-Hasidut. And there's something to this. I told you, the minyan we walked into, and you see these kids with beards and payas. I can tell you in my time, I've told you time and again, you don't have to believe me, but I'm an eyewitness, an ear witness. My dear friend, Izzy Perlmutter, was my classmate in high school and college. He lives in the Pisgat Zev Mizrach. You don't recognize the name. Rabbi Dati, he's a psychologist. He's retired. He's my age today. He's a grandson of Reb Chaim Heller. I write about him in Washington. Through him, I got to know the Rav at a very early age. He's a grandson of Reb Chaim Heller. So in high school, must have been a junior in high school, Izzy grew a beard. Mr. Abrams called him into the office and told him, Yisrael, when you come back on Sunday, there's no beard or you're suspended indefinitely. Do you understand that? He stayed suspended indefinitely for 2 weeks. And this was MTA. And this was Reb Chaim Heller's grandson we're talking about. And he came back Sunday without a beard, plain and simple. And I believe Mr. Abrams told him, I spoke with Rabbi Soloveitchik, who consulted with your grandfather, and Sunday, you're back without the beard. Today, I mean, in my time, if you walk with your tzitzit out, Rabbi Ruchem Gerelich, I can't repeat what the man would say in public. It's mamish vulgar. I'll put it that way. You can, I see it before my eyes. Chaim Nashman, one kid went with it, sits it out. One kid in the whole yeshiva. He came from a Hasidic background. His father was a sheikh. All right, he became a chazan in a conservative temple for 50 years. That's a different story. But his kids are all from, although his daughter is a Shomeret Shabbos, of course, but she's a rabbi. She's a rabbi. She's one of the spiritual leader of Dake Eliezer. I don't know if she's still there. That's Louis Finkelstein's shul that used to meet in his house. That's near Columbia University. Professor David Halivni Weiss was the rabbi. I believe when he left to go on Aliyah, she succeeded him as the spiritual leader. So that's the younger child. The older two I taught are all totally, they're totally from, I don't want to take any credit for it, but that's just the way the ball bounced. The younger one already grew up when feminism was allowed clear, a big force as it is today. So he was the only kid who sits it out. Rav Yeruchim Gilrelik used to eat him up alive. Today in YU, Breslov, Lubavitcher, Hallel with musical instruments, Tanya, the Mashpia, my Talmud, Reb Moshe Weinberger, right or wrong, and you got it. It's worse listening to him speak. He quotes sources that you never dreamt about, the Meimenucha, the Rebbe's, the Rajina. And he's quoting sources. It's a different world altogether. The Rav would say, I one time, it's a true story that I'm telling you, I don't even believe it, but it happened to me. Manny Holzer, when he's a Refuah Shleimer rabbi, Manny Holzer saved my life. Plain and simple, I have to be honest. In 1970, I had influence on his son. The first time a Rebbe inspired his eldest child, who I remained close to until today, Jacob Holzer, a wonderful individual. So Jay was my student and in BMT, and Manny wanted to reward me. He feeded me clandestinely, secretly, tapes that he recorded of the Rav. That he would, you know, he wasn't allowed to record them loud, but these were clear, crystal clear tapes. So I'm listening to the Yarche Kala. It has to be the early 70s, and the Rav is dealing the Yarche Kala with the voted, this is in Boston, to Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam, and what's the Oraita, what's the Rabbanan? And suddenly someone shoots a question at the Rav from the Maralmi Prague. And the Rav says, the Maral Zaptas, yeah, it's not in my ballpark. And I talked to the tape. I was so caught up in it. I say to Rebbe, but the Arsameach says something similar. And then I realize I'm talking to the tape. But what was I trying to do? I was trying to show him the Meshech Chachma, who's a Litvak, says something very similar in the Meshech Chachma, Pasha Shoftim. But the Rav answered, it's not in my ballpark. You understand that? I understand the Rav. So when I hear my Talmud quoting all these Sfarah, I have to admit, it's not my ballpark. You know, I know what I know, I know what I don't know. Called Shas, Paisim, Responsive Literature, that's my ballpark. All right, a little bit Chassidus with Tanya, that I do know. A little bit Likutei Torah, right, that I do know. The Litvishe Musa, that I certainly know. But these Sfarim are not my ballpark. But I want to say, I can accept it that what the youth was lacking 80, 90 years ago, once again they're seeking more. And I stand on what I said when they appointed the Mashpia and people were going crazy. A Litvish yeshiva has a Hasidic Rebbe, and I understand it with me. They tell me at the main minyan, at Eish HaTorah, which is the breakaway from Young Israel of Whitmia, at the main minyan, most of the Balabatim come in strangles today. I mean, we're talking about these are not playing Balabatim. These are people who can buy you and sell you. This is the Five Towns. This is Lawrence. They built a beautiful shul. I mean, you don't know what we're talking about. And they come with strangles, and it's unbelievable. All right, I have my own viewpoint. Come to Eretz Yisrael, and every minute of your life is a mitzvah. But okay, I accept the concept that nowadays we have a rebirth of the Malachim in the concept of Neo-Hasidus, and just as they called Rabbi Levine the Malach, you can call my Talmud the Malach. It's amazing, a YU graduate, a guy involved in outreach, published a wonderful sefer maybe 20 plus years ago, and I told you problems in our preaching are problems that we never dreamt about. Charlie, you could eat in your parents' house. Imagine if you're a Baal Tshuva and your parents' home is glat treif. You understand? How do you eat? You have to eat. How do you cook? How do you make Shabbos? These are tremendous problems. And he dealt with it in that sefer. It was published by Ketav Publishing. And it's until today, I occasionally look into that sefer when I have a question, when I have a problem like that. It's Shem Yirachem. What we come from kosher homes, we don't realize how lucky, how fortunate we are. All right, there are solutions, and today it's a lot easier. If those of you who know the OU just announced that the string cheese became OUD. I mean, it's beyond words. Crepes and the biggest sellers. And I was asking my wife, what is this? Everyone is dancing with joy. I remember when Entenmann's became kosher, they were dancing in the hallways of this building. BMT, I didn't even know what Entenmann's was. And these guys were dancing in the hallway. All right. Now, in relation to the Malachim, the question of throwing the boys out of Torah Vadas is a very fascinating question. Excuse me? It's a very fascinating. So now I want to show you. So last week, I quoted my student, Rabbi Mark Drach, because I knew that they were thrown out. That I knew. But I never knew that his grandfather-in-law wrote a tshuva empowering Mr. Mendelovich to throw them out. And he quotes Gemara with Rabbi Zeira. He quotes the Mari Bruno. So a Talmud showed me that an Art Scroll volume quotes the exact sources and tells the story a little bit different than when I... The facts are here. It's just they have a tremendous problem. The name of the volume is Reb Shraga Feivel, The Life and Times of Rabbi Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, The Architect of Torah in America by Jonas and Rosenblum. Now, this volume caused me a lot of heartache. I wrote, I never got an answer, because they totally disregard Rabbi Revel 100%. And it's not right, it's not right. You don't like Yeshiva University today, that's one thing. But that Rabbi Revel turned the tide 100 years ago is a fact. And Mr. Mendelovich stood on his shoulders. So I never got a response. I did respond in Jewish Action, where I published Mr. Mendelovich's hesped for Rabbi Revel. But what's fascinating here, for them to deal with this, so they deal with it, they tell the following, and you'll see the sources here, that first Mr. Mendelovich had a different problem. Students in Torah Vadas, like American kids, the way they would dress, they walked around with big chups, it's called. I don't know how to blorit b'ivrit. If you look into the Mishnah Brura, you'll see the word blorit. And we call it a chup in Yiddish. I don't know, what do you call it in English? Big clump of hair, big shiloh. Can you put on tefillin? The tefillin float in the air. Is there an English word for it? I don't know. I honestly don't know an English word. A chup. So the Litvishi yeshivas, see the Hasidishi yeshivas, Avram like you, they shave their hair. You understand that's a Hasidish look. Baruch Hashem. So if you look back, you'll see a Hasidish look. Yitzchak looks Hasidish too, but that's not by choice. That's by the reality of Yitzchak and I being basically the same age. I look like that too, basically. But a Gloiris, chup. So Mr. Mendelovich writes to Reb Elchanan Wasserman. And he asked Reb Elchanan Wasserman, do you make an issue out of this? Do you throw the boys out? And Reb Elchanan writes to him very, very intelligently, very, very insightfully, that don't do that. You throw a kid out, he says, it'll leave the yeshiva, they'll go to public school. Rather than take a public stand, privately talk to some of the boys and see whom you can influence. And that's a very, from a chanech, that's a very important answer. And as I told you, I was blown away by the chinuch just a few blocks from here, the Noam High School, where I have many grandsons who went to Noam, many grandsons who went to Chorev. And I was blown away by the chinuch in Noam, because one of my two grandsons I had there at certain, no, one grandson there had long hair. Long hair. Why, I don't know. Let a psychologist analyze it. It could be a rebellion against his parents. His father is a yaku, who became a makubal. His mother is my daughter, who got involved with Breslov. It could be a shtickle rebellion, anything. They're good kids. Don't misunderstand me. So he and another kid had long hair. So someone said to the principal, how do you tolerate these kids with long hair? And the principal answered, how can I tell children who are growing hair to give the cancer patients not to have long hair? That was such a brilliant answer. And these kids, when the long hair kid got married this past summer, his principal from high school came all the way to the wedding. He's mechabed him with a bracha. So you can see the relationship. I told you that. Then I had another grandson there who I gave one of my funny hats to. That hat I'm wearing now, I actually gave my boy this hat again now. So I gave it to him. He liked it. I said, here, you take it. So he's an artist. He does movies and he's very capable. He plays the saxophone. He tells jokes. The kid is born with disability. He appeared on the radio on Kol Chai. I listened. I couldn't believe my ears. My grandson, a radio star on the Frum station. He gives a different debatory yet. So he and another kid were allowed to wear these hats, not to wear kippah. They are performers, they're actors. See, this is chinuch. So that's very nice. But then, beginning on page 103, they have this tremendous problem. How does Art Scroll write that kids were thrown out of Torah Vadas for wearing their tzitzit out? And here, I'm not going to quote it. I want you read it. And you'll understand. They write it very differently than the way yours truly presented it. But the facts are the same. They quote the tshuva from Rabbi Baumel. They quote the Mari Bruno. In other words, they let you know that Mr. Mendelovich and Rabbi Baumel had firm ground that they're standing on, that they flipped these kids out of Torah Vadas. Okay, and now let me go a drop further. I'm all in the Malachim because it created such interest. So you see, I did mention to you the Biyana, and I'm curious. A book just came out, I was told about it, I haven't seen it. Joseph Berg, anyone recognize the name? He writes for the New York Times. I think he's an RJJ graduate. He's either a survivor or he's second generation, and he was raised in a fairly frum home, although I believe not totally. His sister became a total Balat Shuva, totally frum. She lives in Riverdale, if I'm not mistaken. And he knows about Yiddishkeit. He's an RJJ graduate, if I'm not mistaken. You can check it out. You can Google him. And he just came out with a book, The Pious Ones, about the Hasidim in America. So I'm curious to see if he did research, because once again I repeat to you, the first Rebbe to really take hold in America was the Biyana. And the Biyana was on the east side. Now, East Broadway. The Biyana Rebbe, we're dealing with the Friedman family. I'll give you a source in a few minutes. We're dealing with the Friedman family, and the Biyana Rebbe was not like the Malach. He was not that extreme. But people gravitated, the Brooklyn crowd, which interestingly enough, Brooklyn, the East Side, was where the Frum people were. They gravitated around the Biyana Rebbe. Occasionally it was the Biyana and the Malach who they traveled to the Bronx. It was a big trip. The Bronx, 169th and Washington Avenue, is probably close to an hour away from the East Side and longer from Brooklyn, where you have to change trains. So a lady who works for YU, at least when I met her last, works for YU, and she's a student of mine, a wonderful individual. Her last name happens to be Sohn. When I realized her last name was Sohn, I put her in touch with Malka's cousins, the Sohn family. It turns out they're not related. One is a Palisha family, Meshbitz, and one has roots in Germany, but they became friendly because having the same last name is not exactly a popular name, S-O-H-N. In Hebrew, it would be Zayin Vav Nun. So she contacted Malka's cousin, who happens to be my classmate, high school, college, a world-famous medical doctor in his field, and she contacted Dr. Norman Sohn, and she told him that yours truly mentioned his family, which is actually his grandfather, who is the real Malach in the family. So I got this email, which is fascinating. Listen to it. It thanks me for the shiur, whatever. I just ordered the two Jerome Mintz books on Chassidim that Aaron mentioned from Amazon.com. He's writing to my wife. Many years ago, Claire Dershowitz, that's Avi Dershowitz's mother, had mentioned the Malachim to me, but I had no perspective on them until I listened to your lecture. In other words, what evidently happened, and I met Claire Dershowitz, smacked my face once. I told you the story. I have to tell you the story. I was a scholar in residence in Young Israel of Cedarhurst. And I need not tell you, I preached the sermon, and in the sermon I quoted a book had just come out by Avi Dershowitz called Chutzpah. And in Chutzpah he quotes a comment of mine a number of times, someone you know from Teaneck, Jacques Zimmerman, Jean-Jacques Zimmerman, a lawyer that has two doctorates, one in law and one in mathematics, Harvard and Columbia U graduate. And he's widowed today. He was married to a Holzer. She died young. So in the sermon, I quoted Dershowitz talking about my Talmud Jacques. You know, I worked it into the sermon. Then there's a Kiddush afterwards. I don't have to tell you, in the five towns, a Kiddush on Shabbos morning. This is Sudat Shlomo HaMelech Kesha'ato. And after I'm eating a nice piece of cake and had some cola and revived my strength, two ladies come over to me, very elegantly dressed, and she says, this lady says to me with her friend, they're both widowed, they were there for Shabbos, they're not alive anymore. And she says to me, Rabbi Rakefet, she said, I'm disappointed in you. How do you quote from Alan Dershowitz's book, Machalal Shabbos, what he did to his first wife, what he did to Yiddishkeit? And I apologized. I said, well, I'm not quoting him. I'm quoting what he writes about, Jacques. And then when I'm finished trying to justify myself, she says to me, by the way, I'm his mother. So that's Claire Dershowitz. She wasn't too proud of certain aspects of Avi's life. So I thanked her. I said, Mrs. Dershowitz, I agree with your evaluation of your son. Believe me. And if you don't believe me, check with my neighbor, your second cousin, Sam Dershowitz. So she evidently knew Norman Sohn's grandfather. And she was telling him he was a Malach. And this world-famous medical doctor didn't know what the heck she was talking about. So this year, I'm grateful for you for providing me with this information and for saying such kind things about my grandfather, Lazar Sohn. And my mother-in-law always used to talk about him. He was the Malach in the family, Lazar. She was a first cousin. Lazar Sohn was my mother-in-law's first cousin. He was a staunch follower of the Biyana Rebbe. She was a niece to him. I don't have a yichus chop in front of me. He was a staunch follower of the Biyana Rebbe. He lived just half a block from the Rebbe. I often spent time at the Rebbe, both with my father and as well with my grandfather, after my father died in 1946. So you see, his father died young. Norman's father died young, but his grandfather lived on many years later. He may still have been alive when I came into the family. Uncle Lazar, he was, if I'm not mistaken, my mother-in-law's uncle, my wife's great-uncle. But you notice that he hung out around the Biyana Rebbe. The Biyana Rebbe was a lamppost. This was the first Hasidus in America that caught on. And now I want to quote, I want to enforce and give you feeling and bring it to life. And this is why memoir literature is so important. Rafi, are you familiar which Professor Shaul Stampfer's doctorate on the Volozhin Yeshiva. Familiar with it, yes or no? I see from your face you would rather say no, but you don't want to look too ignorant, so you're pleading the fifth, what's it, the Fifth Amendment. Let me inform you why responsibility. His whole doctorate is based upon memoir literature. And what's important about memoir literature, it doesn't lie, because it tells you the way people react. In other words, you don't have, the facts are easy to come by, but the feeling engendered when you know how to sift memoir literature, the past comes to life before your eyes. It's like that those two volumes, the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the author is a dummy, but when he quotes the Rav talking about his youth, his Rebbe, Haslovich, the Cheder, you're living it. You're back 100 years ago. You're living it. I want to quote to you from a very important volume. I think it's the most important work ever written since Shakespeare put down his pen. It is named after the first president of the United States. And let me quote to you, beginning on page 72. While still in high school, I also encountered the Hasidic world in a more intimate fashion. I'll paraphrase it. Had a very close friend, Arnold Lamb. Those of you from Kew Garden Hills may know the Lamb family. Anyone here? 4 children, YU graduates. One is a Torah Badas graduate. The rest are YU graduates. Nachum Lamb, before he got a job, would come to class a year ago, 2 years ago, if you recall. This is his father. His father and I grew up together. Arnold, later Avraham Lamb. Fine. Avraham had a friend who was like a year ahead of him. Avraham was a year ahead of me, and this friend was 2 years ahead of me. His name was Yossi Solomon. And Yossi Solomon was a regular kid in the Bronx. The home was Mesorati, traditional, call it what you wish, a little from beside them. Kid, after elementary yeshiva, winds up in MTA, Manhattan Talmudical Academy. Wasn't from enough. And he left and he went to Torah Vadas. And this kid, when we saw what happened, he went to Torah Vadas. And at the age of 18, he went to Rav Moshe Big, the Rav in the Bronx, the Rav in the Bronx. Okay, underline the. Daf Haben Hashidda, you have to get married, Hasidish kid. And they knew a girl, I believe, on the east side, Brooklyn, whatever. Made a shidduch. That's when I learned the expression "vishprint the katz ibid the vasha." I remember that was the, we were kids, we were so enthralled. A kid of 18, 19 is already looking for a wife, getting married, Torah v'das, a guy with a beard. We called him the Malach. Now the Malachim, the real Malach, was already dead, but this was exactly the atmosphere. And they, and how does the cat jump over the water? We shrink the cats, ibid the vasa. And Rabbi Biff brought them together, made the shirif. They looked at each other once, got married. I met him at the Kotel a number of years ago on a Friday night. Yossi Solomon, I didn't remember anything that I knew him, that I knew Reb Moshe Big. He barely remembered Avraham Lamb. People have funny memories. So, you know, you remember what you want to remember. But somehow what your brain takes, I can give you the New York Yankee lineup for the 30s, the 40s, Rabbi Lichtenstein, the last person alive who'll give you the Chicago Cubs 1945 lineup with which they went to the World Series. I think the last living player was Phil Cavaretto, who died at 92, 93, a year or two ago. But you remember when Sahidi, but he's a sweetheart of a guy. They're happily married, face. They've gone on to 60 years of marriage. They never looked back. And they met each other once before they got married. Rabbi Moshe Big made the shidduch, as I recall. If Yossi Solomon is listening, correct me if I don't have all the facts right. So he moved to Williamsburg, and he invites me for a Shabbos. And I come to Williamsburg for Shabbos. I'm a kid in high school. You got to understand, I must have been a junior or senior in high school, and here's Yossi Solomon learning in Torah Vadas, learning around the clock. and I come to Williamsburg, we daven in a shtibbel, we eat quickly, and we run across the bridge to the east side to catch Kiddush at the Biyana Rebbe's shtibbel, home. The Biyana Rebbe, you see the Malachim were attracted to him. And I have to tell you, that Friday night, that Kiddush, let me read to you, that Kiddush affected my entire life. If I know how to make Kiddush, it's because of that Friday night. After the prayers, I'm on page 73, we quickly consumed the Sabbath meal. Yossi and I then headed across the Williamsburg Bridge to the Lower East Side. In less than half an hour, we were in the dwelling of the Biyana at 247 East Broadway. We joined the Rebbe's immediate family and a few of his inseparable disciples around the Sabbath table. Now, just think, we ate, we walked close to a half hour, and he stood and had made Kiddush, because all the Hasidic incantations that they say open up a Hasidic sefer, siddur, you'll see, and with the kavana, and we, the Shalom Aleichem. Although it was one of the Friday night, the Rebbe had not yet recited the Kiddush. The Rebbe was preoccupied with the prayers that preceded the Kiddush in accordance with the tradition of his forebears. The Rebbe then chanted the Kiddush with intense devotion, eyes closed, and appeared to be in a trance of ecstasy and holiness. The Biyana's Kiddush took many minutes, and I was an enchanted onlooker. I even imagined that angels had descended from on high to hearken to the Rebbe's passionate Kiddush. Ever since that Friday night, whenever I recite the Kiddush, I recall the Biyana's fervor and intensity. Little could I imagine, as I stood before the Biyana Rebbe, that one day I would teach his granddaughter's Torah in the holy city of Yerushalayim. So you see, the Biyana can't be overlooked. Shalom Mordechai Friedman. Unbelievable. But without boring you with all the details of the rest of Shabbat, it was very special. I still can't get over the Suda Shlishit was in the old Torah Vadas, the original Torah Vadas building where they took over a public school. And there was a Sheva Brachas at Suda Shlishit. And they were dancing in the narrow hallways of the public school. Hundreds and hundreds already dancing. Oji Shema. It was a Shabbos to remember. With the conclusion of the Sabbath, it was time to return to a more mundane existence in the Bronx. I parted from the Solomons and headed for the subway. Yossi's final words to me were, quote, "Ani, to be a real and complete Jew, you have to be a chassid. If you do not wish to be a follower of the Biyana, at least be a Lubavitcher." End quote. And gentlemen, what you just saw, there's a world to it. What was he really saying to me? All right, he's saying, Ani, maybe we're a little extreme. Malachim, maybe the Biyana Rebbe, a little extreme, but at least be a Lubavitcher. See, Lubavitcher already was more enlightened, was more Americanized. Even a Biyana Chassid, even in Malach, realized that. And that was Yossi Solomon's parting words. All right, I have to apologize. You have to ask, what went wrong? I mean, I was exposed to so much good influence in my life. What went wrong that I am what I am? But I have to say, I think I make this clear in Washington. that with all the wonderful influences I had, and Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, because there are very few people in the world who heard Kiddush from the Vyana Rebbe, spoke and learning with Rebbe Aaron Kotler, sat at the feet of the Rav, spoke in Shailas and Shuvas Halacha L'maisa with Rebbe Moshe Feinstein, with Rebbe Dreshev Elio Henkin. But I have to be honest, the greatest influence in my life was Bnei Akiva. The holiness, the purity I saw in Bnei Akiva, I saw nowhere else. There was never a word of scandal about Bnei Akiva. These were boys and girls who didn't look at money, but looked at Torah with their heart and souls. And from Bnei Akiva of my time, we must have tens of thousands of descendants living on Admat HaKodesh. So ultimately, Bnei Akiva won out, but there are other strands within me that pulsate and inspire me until this day. And let me go a step further. More information, and the correcting Jerome Mintz. Fabulous. I mean, there was such a reaction to the Malachim, so I'm so inspired that one little lecture in Yerushalayim could provoke comments from all over the world. Beautiful comments. So you see, Jerome Mintz makes the point, and I quoted it, although I also said there probably were some exceptions. Jerome Mintz makes the point that after World War II, beards and payas and strimals and black clothes and holier-than-thou attitude, the pious ones, to quote the title of the new book, which I haven't seen, so I can't tell you its quality or my opinion of its quality. That's a Joseph Berger. That's someone new. He writes for the New York Times. He's quite accomplished, and he writes very well. And when he writes about Yiddishkeit, he knows what he's writing about, because he grew up in it, and has family members who are totally frum. He's not alien to it. When he writes about the Erev in Borough Park, let's say, he knows what he's talking about. So Jerome Mintz, who I don't know his, I don't know who he was. He's dead already 20 years. Hard for me to believe it. I never met him. He was in the Midwest, wherever. But his two books, to me, those were the best two books originally on Hasidus in America. So he makes the point, after World War II, the Malachim didn't have to go far. You had the Sakhma Ruv, and the Malachim basically became Sakhma. So I want to mention, it's true, but there was a Mir Tanikar who became Lubavitch. And once again, I thank my Talmud, Aryeh Lieberman. First of all, Beryl Levy, the man who built the OK into a major hashkacha. You've heard of the OK. Today, his son, Reza, I think his name is Sachadov Levy Chabad. He became Chabadnik. He was a malach. The Belevsky family, the Zirkin family, and the Weberman family from Miami all became Chabadnikim. There were a few malachim that became Lubavitch, and he mentions these names. Now, the Weberman family, as I mentioned, is a very famous family in America, where unfortunately there has been a lot of difficulty and bad publicity. A man sentenced 50 years in prison. The New York Times had a field day. Even the Daily News had a field day. The New York Post had a field day. Every website had a field day. But that's only part of the family that became Satma. And the Lubavitch part evidently lives in Florida, or Shluchimta, Florida, etc. What's also interesting, and it's an amazing, what you can find on the computer, it's beyond comprehension, beyond words. So there's a website, Kvarim, kevarim.com, kvarim.com, and you can type in any name of any rabbi, and lo and behold, here is the tombstone of the Malach. And I'll tell you what's very interesting about it. No titles whatsoever. He evidently detailed in his lifetime how the tombstone should read. Ponit Man, Hechasid, Rebbe Chaim Avraham Dovbeba, Reb Shmir Zalman HaKohen, Halach Bederecha Emet, the Rabbim Bozika Niftar, and underneath, he died the first day of Shvuot, 1938. So, very fascinating. Left out all titles. Reb, Reish, with an apostrophe on top. HaKohen, Halach B'derech Ta'emet, went on the truth path. V'Rabim Bozika, with this Derech, Bo. Derech is both Bo and Bo. I think in Latin Hebrew they would use Bo. Am I right or wrong? They use more the feminine form. But it's one of those words that you can use either Derech Achat or Derech Achad. I think we would use Derech Achat in Latin Hebrew. Correct me if I'm wrong. V'Rabim Bozika. Then what's fascinating about this Kfarim website is that people write in comments. If you go, give history, if you go to comment number 13, the mother of Rabbi Beryl Levy, father, oh let me correct, I gave the wrong name for a son, father of Reb Dun Yoel Levy, I think I gave the name of the Nubiana Rebbe, father of Reb Dun Yoel Levy of the OK Kashrut organization, was a sister of the Malach. So that is very, very interesting. Rabbi Shimon Levine writes in, my Rebbe, Rabbi Pinchas Aaron Weberman, was very close to the Malach, as were his brothers. There still exists a yeshiva, Netivos Olam of the Malachim, run by Rabbi Meir Weberman in New York. There was an article in Mishpacha magazine, written by Yisrael Besser, co-authored by Rabbi Yudel Weberman, about the history of the Malachim, and it gives you the dates. I suggest you get a copy. It will enlighten you to the most hidden tzaddik to reach the shores of America. There is more to the story that isn't published, but if you can get one of the Weberman brothers to sit down, they have quite a story to tell. Unfortunately, you won't read it in Art Scroll, which would not exist without the Malach and the Weberman types who paved the way for all of us here in the United States. And Rakafid adds, and without Rabbi Revel and his types who paved the way for the Malach. Okay, it's fascinating. And Adkan, but I have to say, Berlevi's mother, sister of the Malach, it all falls into place. And Beryl Levy, of course, becomes a Chabadnik, and the OK Kashrut is basically the Chabad kosher symbol in the United States and the world today. I would imagine the Mashkichim of Chabad, the Mashkichim are all over the world, and there are 50 plants in China today under Hashgacha. And without Chabad, the OU would cave in. I heard that from Rabbi Nachum Ganak. I don't think anyone here is willing to live permanently in China just to give hashgacha, but Chabadnikim are unbelievable how they're able to live anywhere and yet raise their children in their footsteps. On that level, we have to say kol hakavod. If I'm not mistaken, they have a website where they supplement their children's education in places where there's literally no chance to learn proper svarim, where they teach them chassidus, etc.
What classes?
Entire classes.
Starting from God.
Unbelievable. Hours. And anyone can access it?
Or
no, just you have to be able to shaluach and have the code, etc.
It's been very organized.
Very well. Kala kavod, kala kavod. 24. Wow. Oh, what an institution. Okay. Now, we're ready to roll with Chabad. And I saw already, I got reaction from Chabad. Someone writes to me, you didn't mention the Rashag. Maybe you don't know about him. I wouldn't be that stupid to lecture on the Rebbe without knowing about Reb Shmayahu Gurayeh. But give me a chance, I'm just beginning. Another dear student wrote to me, but you don't mention the faults of Chabad. And he gave me a whole list of where he has had problems with Chabad. He's in a position of replacing rabbis. So I wrote back to him what I always tell Yitzchak, Savlanut. Yitzchak, yes, but he also asked a good question. I'm going to get there. Savlanut, Don't suffer from that illness, Savzonitis. That's the worst illness you can have. It's the first Israeli word I learned when I came in Aliyah, Savlanut. And then I coined the term already, Savlanitis. When a student asks you a question that you're going to get to a week or two or three down the line, have patience. You follow me, Avram? So I want to make very clear to everyone that what I'm about to talk about with Chabad, the facts have to be the facts. And I'll draw the facts from many different areas and I'll explain where I'm getting them from. Some are books that Chabad people like, some are books they don't like. But I want to draw what I consider facts as a historian, as someone who did a lot of major work from archives. I have a chush. I've developed, if I wanted to, I could give a course on a graduate school level how to do research in archives. You know, you have to have a feeling how to handle it, what's true, what's not true. Archives generally do not lie. If you have the right approach, they're better than interviews because people see everything through their own prisma. But archives do not lie. You just have to know how to evaluate it and put it in order. But I have to make clear that when it comes to facts, the facts have to be correct, and if I make a mistake, I plead with you, correct me factually. The understanding and the interpretation of Chabad is yours truly. You can agree with me or not agree with me, but don't correct me. And I want you to understand the way a Talmud of the Rav, someone raised in the 40s into the 50s, those were my formative years, basically. A person who tries to understand what's going on and has gone on in the Torah world in the last 120, 30, 40 years. I think that's my expertise. This is the way I view Chabad. It's an outsider looking in. I don't claim to be an insider. I'm not a Chabadnik. I know a lot about Chabad. You'll see why in a few minutes. There are reasons why. But I want to make clear it's one man's opinion. And in the understanding and the influence and what I feel Chabad has accomplished, what it's done, what it will do, it's my understanding. You can agree, you can disagree. It's free choice. If you disagree with the Rebbe, disagree in dignity. Don't tell everyone kiblu at thy tea, but I do tell everyone we can't fight with each other. We can't do what's going on in Panovich today or what went on in Bavov or goes on in Bavov yet. It's disgraceful. It pushes people away from Yiddishkeit. They have different opinions? Absolutely. Facts? Correct me. Opinions? It's all right, you disagree, so it's a litvak looking in, a Talmud of the Rav looking in. Fine, understandings are incorrect, in your opinion. In my opinion, and this is memoir literature, this is the way I see it, and many others see it as well. It's the way my Rebbe saw it, etc. Okay, I want to make that clear. So then we spoke about the first Rebbe's arrival in America. At first Rebbe, the first Rebbe to come to America, the sixth Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Yitzchak. And I spoke last night with someone who grew up in Agavarna, Nishta Agavarna. I mentioned him in the shiur last week, Barry Lieberman, Barnett Liebman, if you recognize the name, that's Shlomo Kunin's first cousin. They look like, if Barry had a beard, he looks exactly, the two cousins look very, very similar. When Barry was sitting shiva for his mother, and Zichrono Levracha Rose was very close to the sixth Rebbetzin and the seventh Rebbetzin, so his brother flew in from Los Angeles, L'Nachem Avo. When I looked at his, not his brother, his cousin, his first cousin, I looked at his first cousin, I said, wow, if I put a beard on my friend Barry, you two could pass for twins, basically. They're both tall, the same gestalt. So I spoke with Barry last night, and I was telling him about the Kramers, and he started to tell stories, and I was absolutely right. The Kramer family was an entire family where everyone was devoted to the Rebbe. The grandfather, the three sons, the daughters-in-law, everyone was devoted to the Rebbe. And Baruch Hashem, one Kramer, one of the sons, alive and well, lives in the Five Towns. 1 second, let me just see if I recall his first name. Let's see whether they give the names of the children here. 1 second. Of course, to accept responsibility. Hyman, one brother, succeeded the father as president. Abe became treasurer, and Sam became the legal counsel. So the grandson that I know, who just turned 90, who lives in Lawrence, probably is a grandson. It's not a son of the founder, it's a grandson. And I taught his children in many of the institutions where I taught over the last half century. So they played a big role, the Rebbe coming, and then when the Rebbe returns and to redeem the Rebbe, to get the Rebbe out, the bribes that were paid, and you can check the literature, an entire book was written on how the Rebbe was saved, and the Gestapo person who helped the Rebbe get through Warsaw, got him to the plane, I think they flew to Sweden, from there they went on a boat to America. There's an entire journey. And I mentioned, in addition to the Rebbe's family, and we'll come back and deal with the family later. It's very important, the family, and there's a lot to be learned. But there were two key people who become crucial to everything the Rebbe will achieve in the United States. And they already were brought into the Lubavitch picture by the sixth Rebbe, by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak. What's interesting about Rabbi Chaim Mordechai Hodakov, and what's interesting about Dr. Nissen Mindel, they came from a different background. They weren't Lubavitchers, they weren't narrow, they were very open, they came from Torah, Derech Eretz, they were followers of Rav Shimshon Afol Hirsch. But the sixth Rebbe, who was evidently a tremendous organizer and administrator, he ran the Tomchei Tumimim Yeshiva, which his father, Avshalom Dovber, the fifth Rebbe, had established. He was the Menachel. He had a chush, he brought them in. And I want to tell you, when you talk about Rav Nissen Mindel, Barry Lieberman knew him very well. He didn't have a beard. He was known as Doctor, a doctorate from Columbia. The man was a genius with languages. He knew English perfectly without any accent. If you spoke to him, Barry said, you would be guaranteed that he was born in London. If he had any accent, it was a British accent, it was a limey accent, as they say in popular language. And here's a man, his native language was Russian, Yiddish. Who knows how many languages he encountered before he encountered English, and he was totally at home in all these various languages. What a help, what a hand to the Rebbe. Okay? And you have to appreciate that. All right, now, let me go a step further. How do I know I'm right? Yeah, Yitzchak is sitting there and thinking, all right, Rakefet, he's met, what, the sixth Rebbe, America, what it was like, it's a little Shabbos. What, Rakefet was alive in the 20s? I can't fake Yitzchak out. We were together in the same shaved in Bnei Akiva. Okay, so let me just quote now some, a drop of memoir literature. And this was just recorded February 6, 2015. Am I right, Avram? This was this month. Am I right or wrong? Right on, right on. Rebbetzin Chavi Hecht. Who is Rebbetzin Chavi Hecht? That's the widow of Rabbi J.J. Hecht. The whole Hecht family. This was a key Lubavitcher family until today. I believe the Rav of Eilat, the Chabad Shaluch there, is a Rabbi Hecht. A tremendous family. Rebbetzin Hecht shared with me, she's being interviewed, this is from a Chabad website, I thank Arye Liebman. Rebbetzin Hecht shared me with the students, she's addressing students of Machon Chana. Right now in Chabad, this entire month, this entire period, devoted to women. They just had the conference of the Shluchot. So it's tremendous emphasis on women and women education. And she's coming in like someone walked into this room, 90 plus years old, give a lecture on Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. You follow? We would be jumping from the ceiling to hear it. Well, someone who yet knew Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Washington Heights, before the 1940s. So she's talking, Rebbetzin Hecht shared with her students, Mary's living in America, for the Friedrich, the previous Rebbe, the sixth Rebbe is called the Friedrich Rebbe. Do you follow me? That's the way he's referred to, Rafi. Friedrich, Eli, previous Rebbe. arrived on the Shuas and the difference the arrival of the Friedeker Rebbe made. Quote, the Rebbe, one human being, changed what Jewish life looked like, she related. The Rebbe said he was going to change America. And he did. When the Rebbe spoke about kosher chinuch, we didn't understand at first what he meant. We understood that food had to be kosher. But chinuch, even something so taken for granted today, the teachers in Torah schools should be themselves, be Torah observant. The Friedeker Rebbe had to campaign for this. You have no idea what that means. Gentlemen, are you familiar with that work that I just quoted before? Dash, dash, can Shakespeare put down his pen? The author describes his education in elementary yeshiva, yeshiva, Rabbi Israel Salanka. Until the Shanghai crowd came in, I don't believe I had one teacher who was a proper Shomer Shabbat. Not one teacher. Maybe Rabbi Moses and Rabbi Zion. There was a son, a father-in-law and son-in-law. They were Shomer Shabbos. But my first grade, she was a Mapainik. Her brother was in the Knesset. Don't want to mention names. I had a Sion, a descendant of the biggest Hasidic families, with a last name that immediately you say, which dynasty are you? Shabbos, he taught me for Bar Mitzvah. Kids came Shabbos with money to pay him. He would open up a Tanakh and the kid would put the money in and he'd close it. He didn't touch it. The Tanakh closed the $2 bill, two singles, no $2 bills yet. But follow me, kids. Kids paid Shabbos. These were our teachers. The Rebbe who introduced me to Gemara, I write about it. He changed my life. But who wants to learn Gemara? What do I care about them? He said, fifth grade, he said, in Hebrew, Talmidim, it's like boxing. Joe Wolcott versus Joe Lewis, Abaye, Rava, round one. Joe Lewis wins, Abaye, round two. Joe Wolcott wins, Rava. He did that? I haven't missed a day in my life, 70 years later, that I haven't opened the Gemara. Even today, with all that I was saying, I began learning 4:30. I've already opened, I did a Daf Gemara. Avram, you follow? And he was Chal Shabbos. Chal Shabbos. A Zionist, I write about it. not only in Salanta, in every day school in the world, where in America, whatever day schools you had, Baltimore, the Rav when he started Boston, if he didn't have the Shanghai crowd, Yitzhak wouldn't be sitting here. You got to understand, who went into teaching? America? My parents were typical American Jews, good Jews, but typical. My son, the doctor, I disappointed them. My brother, Baruch Hashem, then he ate their heart out. He already was a doctor making a good living, and he throws it all away to come to Be'er Sheva. Dr. Glick brought my brother on Aliyah. I mean, I inspired him to come. We were here already, 69. He came 73. But my poor parents, and then ultimately we brought our parents in Aliyah. So my great-grandchildren are a seventh generation. They can go around boasting. My great-grandfather's parents lived here. So figure it out. The sixth generation. I don't figure. It's beyond me to figure it out. But they can go, you know, around boasting Israel. Right, you're a Johnny come lately. What we spoke about yesterday. I came on the Mayflower. But you had here yesterday, Shia. If you're Australian, don't boast that you came on the Mayflower to Australia, if you know what I'm talking about. Okay, Charlie, that was yesterday, shall we hit yesterday? I have no idea at the end what we're going to go into next week. It's Baruch Hashem, there's so much to learn. You can't be bored. You can't be bored. Torah history is so rich and so fascinating and so interesting. So you understand, the sixth Rebbe came to America in order to teach in a day school. The chinuch has to be kasher. What kind of chinuch? Could you imagine these kids who put the dollar bills into his don't want to mention the name, but Hashem Yirachem. We had one teacher in Solanta who was the son of a Hasidic Rebbe. His daughter married an Arab from the Triangle. I mean, what are we talking about? It was unbelievable. Kasher Echinuch. It's the sixth Rebbe. Rebbe Tzenhech told the students how her husband, Rabbi J.J. Hecht, and all his brothers became Lubavitcher Hasidim. Their grandfather, Hirsch Melech, opened the mikveh in Brownsville. Now, you have to understand, Brownsville is where my wife comes from. That's East New York, Brownsville. That had from Jews. And they needed a mikveh. His panasa was his mikveh. Open the mikveh, you go into mikveh here, you have to pay, right or wrong. All right, this was his panasa. He built the mikveh, had a mikveh. Before, in 1927, it's really 1928, 29, when the Rebbe was here, I believe. Before leaving the mikveh, he used the mikveh. The Friedrich Rebbe wanted to give Hirsch Melech a tip. He was the Balan, modern, in modern Hebrew and Mishnaic Hebrew. And he refused to take it. The Rebbe told him, quote, and I will give you a blessing. Your grandchildren will become my Hasidim. Many years later, there was a Chabadnik teaching at Pei Rav Hadass, Rabbi Israel Jacobson. He influenced a number of students to come to Lubavitch. My husband was the first of the six Hecht brothers. And all his brothers followed after him, said Rebbe Tzin Hecht. And you all know the name Hecht. And now multiply these brothers and their children and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren listening to the school that Morty Tarrigan just described, 24-6. You can pick it up all over the world. I imagine it has to be 24-7 because their times here are Shabbos and times they're not Shabbos. Then you talk about Rakefet telling you that that Jews were not Shomer Shabbos. For a Jew to remain Shomer Shabbos in those days took tremendous Mesirat Nefesh, explained Rebbe Tzin Hecht. Almost every job required working 6 days a week, and that included Shabbos. Rebbe Tzin Hecht once asked the father how he had managed to remain so strong in his Shabbos observance when so many around him were not able to withstand the difficult test. Quote, my daughter, Shabbos is Shabbos, was her father's simple reply. But now listen to this story. Here you have a Frum family, America, Brownsville. Rebbe Tzin Hecht told the story of an uncle who had been diagnosed with cancer of the spleen. When a rant came to them begging that they should ask the Rebbe, that's the Friedrich Rebbe, for a blessing, Rabbi Hecht insisted that she should first promise that the shop would be closed on Shabbos. The aunt promised, and Rabbi Hecht put in a letter to the Rebbe. The next day, the uncle was operated on, despite the fact that all the tests clearly showed that there was cancer. When they opened him up, nothing was there. And their living testimony, I tell it as it was. You had families who davened on Yom Kippur, doesn't Chaim Soloveitchik, doesn't the Hagon Reb Chaim in his seminal essay, Rupture and Reconstruction. I believe I heard he's working on a new edition of Rupture and Reconstruction. It's already over 20 plus years since he issued the first article was published. He describes it. People davened on Yom Kippur in Boston, in Brookline, with tears, with crying. Show me in Teaneck that they davened like that. I still remember Shmini Atzeret. I davened in a shul where the women were two flights up. If you stood underneath the women's gallery, which ended with a curtain two flights above you, you had needed an umbrella in Shmini Atzeres. They were pouring tears, the davening for Geshen, for Bracha, these were the same people. Shabbos, davened at 6:30, made Kiddush, changed their clothes, headed to work. And this was all over, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Bronx, to be a Shema Shabbos? And the Rebbe arrived. Okay. And I want to go one major final step further. I just put in a disclaimer 10 minutes ago that I'm an outsider looking in. And I have certain opinions, certain viewpoints, certain conclusions. And I'm not willing to argue with you. It's my feeling. You're in that cafe. You don't accept it, don't accept it. Correct me when the facts are wrong. I'm the happiest guy in the world to be corrected. Sometimes it's not my fault. I'm quoting from, but I'll tell you later, next week how I evaluate how I certain books I'll quote from and tell you why. But you have to ask a question. Hey, Rakefet, Aaron, Arnie, Rebbe, whatever name you know him by, who the heck are you? An outsider to look in and have an opinion. Be humble. I wouldn't look in on the Rav and try to give an opinion because I'm not a likvat, ich bin a chassid. I didn't get a doctorate because the Rav told me, like he told Rabbi Braunschweigel, you need a doctorate. Can you imagine Rabbi Braunschweigel going for a doctorate? But the Rav told him, you're a bright fellow, get a doctorate. Who gives me permission? So I have to tell you, I have one advantage that very few have. I was intimately close to one of the most important Chabad families. And I constantly had a telescope from the late 50s until the Rebbe died and beyond, right into the Rebbe's office, mind, and inner working. You want me to prove it to you, Avram? I will. Thank you. I will prove it. How? Very simple. I'm now quoting, unbelievable. Again, I thank my Talmud Aryeh Liebman. He sends me all the good things he thinks the Rebbe should know. He's a great guy, Aryeh. Chana teaches in the Chabad, the high school for women. She's published textbooks. Very, very capable. And Aryeh, I don't know, the guy knows Shas, Paiskim, many different languages, and a computer genius, A number one. One of my greatest finds ever. Someday I'll tell you the whole story, but that has to be 100 years from now. And then Aryeh will be very proud to say that you know Aaron Rakefet 100 years from now, okay? You'll ask me the whole inside story. So here's an interview with someone we just mentioned, Alan Dershowitz. Chabad interviews him. Here's my story, influencing the future. Listen to this, I'm quoting. Now, Alan Dershowitz had no reason to fudge this. He's telling the truth. I first met the Rebbe in 1951 when he had just become the Rebbe. I was attending Yeshiva University High School in Brooklyn, Talmudical Academy, which was on Bedford Avenue and President Street in Brooklyn. So if you know Brooklyn, Bedford Avenue and President Street is a few blocks from 770 Eastern Parkway. Even in my old age, I don't think it would take me more than 10 minutes to walk. Ah, my best friend in school was Tzvi Grona. Yitzchak, you heard it? Whose uncle, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Groner, was the Rebbe's secretary. And Tzvi and I used to walk over to the Chabad headquarters to visit Rabbi Groner. We'd bring our sandwiches and spend our lunch hour with him. I'll read the next paragraph in 2 minutes. Gentlemen, Aaron Rakefet, everyone needs... The Rav spoke about this when he eulogized Rabbi Israel Klavan. Everyone needs a good friend. Look into the Rambam, Kanei Lecha Chava, and Perish HaMishnayot. The Rav quoted it. What does a friend mean? A friend is someone you can talk with, someone you can unburden yourself, someone you can trust, someone you can argue with, someone you understand each other because your frame of reference is the same. my dear friends, Zvi Groner, I knew from Yeshiva College. He was a year behind me. Yitzhak, was he in your class? Do you remember Zvi? Yeah, but he was a year behind. Was he my year or your year? I think he might have been my year, actually. We were the same age, but he lost the year because he spent time in Israel. They didn't give credit then. That's the answer. So Zvi Groner, I knew from college. I can't say we were intimate friends, but we were classmates. There's a famous story there with it's a story I tell you. Close the tape for a minute, but I can tell you the story very simply. He dormed, and one of his roommates was a guy named Yudel Rosenberg. You know him as he was a Chaver Knesset, Ben Meir, professor at Bar Ilan. And Yudel came from, his father was a rabbi, his grandfather was Rabbi Perek Metzky, had a little money, he had a jalopy. So he used to drive the Rav to the airport. So one Thursday morning, the Rav was delayed, or Wednesday morning, he was in New York longer, or it was Thursday morning, he had stayed over Wednesday night, maybe there was a Mizrahi meeting, or he had a wedding, whatever. And he had to get back to Boston early. And he came to the room where they were sleeping in the dormitory, Klein Hall. It's the site that I think their classroom was there. It was a dorm then, a dorm for the college. And he knocks on the door, and he wakes them. It was, after 8, but who got up to go to Minyan in those days? And Zvi had davened already. He went to Minyan. He opens the door, and Rebbe, before the Rav says to him, "Is Yudel here yet?" And Yudel's not away. And the Rav is starting to tell Zvi, "Tell Yudel I have to leave at 10 o'clock. He should meet me at my apartment, my mother's apartment across the street." We leave at 10, and suddenly you hear a big yell from the other room. "Who the dash is that dash that had the dash chutzpah to wake me up and knock on the door?" And he's going crazy. And the Rav turns around and walks away. And Yudel comes out, and Zvi is white as a sheep. He wants to fall into the ground, he told me. And he goes, "Who the hell was that?" And Zvi doesn't answer. And he goes, oh no, he says to Yudel. He says, "Do you mean the Rav? The Rav?" Now, it's 2 hours later, fast forward. Yudel, who is afraid of nobody and had all this protection, is shaking. He's walking across the street. What the Rav will do to him? He knocks on the door. This was the Rebbetzin's apartment, Rebbetzin Pesha, the widow of Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe Feinstein's first cousin, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik's widow. He knocks on the door, frightened. And he says, "Rabbi, I'm ready to go." Gets into the car, they talk about the weather, they talk about the Boston Red Sox, they talk about everything. The Rav doesn't mention one word to him. Now you just think about that little story. So that's Zvi Groner and Nutzvi. Then we come in Aliyah. Come in Aliyah. It's not like today, nefesh benefesh. It's not like today, you close your door in Teaneck and 24 hours you open your door later in Beit Shemesh. You come on a boat, Eretz Nachriyah, no one speaks English, people look down upon you. Who the hell are you? You didn't fight in the Six-Day War. Other people, my first time my wife went to the dentist, she came home crying. I said, "What happened at the dentist?" "Oh, the dentist was fine. But he called me the biggest idiot in the world for leaving America and coming in Aliyah. You're crazy, you're nuts. I wish I could go to America." That was the Yeshiva 69. So in the absorption center where we were, a tzaddikit comes around every week. One day she devotes to helping the olim who speak English. Her name, Batya Groner, which became Batya Groner. Zvi's mother took my wife shopping, had a shop. Then you had to know what meat was kashid, what meat wasn't kashid. It's not like today, it was a different world. There was no freezer. How do you shop? How do you cook here? How do you, when it says a measurement, if we're in America, how do you translate that to an Israeli measurement?
I said, oh, you're Tzvi's mother. So Tzvi and I hooked up together and we became best friends. And I had a tremendous advantage with Tzvi. Why? Because on one side, Tzvi in the 60s here became very close to Hagon Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So on one side, his best friend is Chaim Soloveitchik. On the other side, his close, intimate friend is Ani Rothkopf. So I, from Tzvi, first of all, I knew everything going on in Chabad. He was the Rebbe's cousin, the Groner family. His father, Yaakov, the eldest of the Groner brothers, was a chassid, davening with a katel, but he wasn't intimately involved in Chabad. But his uncle was the Rebbe's right hand. This was his secretary on the ground. Rabbi Mendel handed all the correspondence. Rabbi Chodkov, I should say, Dr. Mendel, Rabbi Chodkov, of course, ran the entire organization and all the chinuch, the administrator par excellence. But the one who was the Rebbe's mamis, shamis, mishares, was his cousin, should live and be well, Reb Leibel Groner. So I had a periscope right into the Rebbe. Not only that, Zvi's uncle, of course, was Reb Itche David Groner, the Rav of Melbourne. And I'll read his story, not today, we'll start next week. He too I got to know through Zvi. So I had a periscope right into the happenings, the thinking, the mind. Oh, I can tell you stories. And I'll end off the class with one classic story. When the Tzvi, who's unfortunately no longer alive, he had a difficult life. Not to go into it, but he had a difficult life. Kanayin Hara, he left four lovely children, and three are married, many grandchildren, Kanayin Hara, all going on a beautiful Torah path. But he and his wife had a difficult life. She was an interesting person. She was Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld's great-granddaughter. She was a Beishtakov girl who broadened a fabulous photographer. I believe I have a book in my office dedicated in her memory. She was a Renaissance woman in the full sense of the word. We were very close. We were very fond of Chaya. And I was very close to Tzvi. And I had a periscope into the Rebbe, and when Tzvi's grandmother died, so the Groners were sitting shiva around the corner from my house. Tzvi's father and mother lived on Rehov Asa, a half block up from Rav Berlin, where I live, which breaks off Asa. So I'm a Nachum Avil a number of times. And there are all the brothers sitting together. The burial was in Israel, but the part of the family originally is from Israel. And there's Leibel sitting there. And I can't believe my eyes. Leibel Groner sitting shiva, three telephones in front of him. Every minute a phone is coming in from a different part of the world, and he's giving guidance and answering questions and reaching New York and speaking with the Rebbe. I finally couldn't control myself, and being so close to the family, I could be a bit of a chutzpan. I say to Reb Leibel, I say, I thought you're sitting shiva, you're not allowed to do malacha. Isn't that one of these surim when you sit shiva? He says, this is not malacha, this is melechet kaidish for the Rebbe. And boy, I got a new Hasidish definition at that moment. There's malacha and there's melechet hakaidish. Malacha, you cannot do. Melechet hakaidish for the Rebbe, this is on a different level. And that Chazal never asked. So you see, I end off with a beautiful, unique Hasidic story. But that Hasidic story already opens your mind. What does it mean to be a chassid? Okay, all right. What did we do today? Can I inherit? First of all, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, because I wasn't feeling that well yesterday, and I was able to give the shiur. No one noticed that it was not an easy day for me. And today, Baruch Hashem, full strength, for a youngster my age, a great-grandfather quite a few times already. On Thursday, remember, you don't say Tachnun for two reasons. One, it's Reish Chodesh. Two, Rakefet has a brit of a great-grandson. But I had to turn down the big kibbutz because I have a medical procedure in the morning and I don't want to risk holding a baby when you're not in full, you know, after you've been, what's the word, sensitized or whatever. What's the word?
Sedated,
okay. Sedated. All right, so what did we do today? Baruch Hashem, we came back to the Malachim, and very, very fascinating. The Biyana Rebbe awaits a definitive biography of Biyana and Breya, and how the grandson comes back to be Rebbe, and why the sons couldn't be Rebbeim. There are reasons why. Everything falls together. It's not the sons were frum, but they were business people. They already integrated into America. They were business people. Real estate, I think. I don't know if both sons are living today. I believe at least one is gone. I don't know if perhaps the other one is still alive. The daughter married Menachem Breya, who I write about in Washington, and it's his son who continues the tradition today as Rebbe. And I have the ability to say that one of the most famous Rebbeim in the world ate in my house. So I ask Yomo, is my home kosher or not? I asked that to his Gabbai, who met me and couldn't believe that Rebbe's hugging me, we're kissing each other, we're dancing around each other, and he looks at a shake, it's a nice laugh the way Rakefet looks, and he runs after me, "Was is I aside? What's your secret?" So I asked him, "I Rebbe es no kasha glat, yo avada." The Rebbe asked him, "Samech lein af dem mensch avada." So I said, "The Rebbe ate in my house." The poor guy fainted on the spot. I had to revive him with a pail of water. Take my word for it. Okay, figuratively. But that's the Malachim, and I accept that insightful comment that there are new Malachim today, Neo Hasidim, in our world, both, by the way, in America and in Israel as well. In Israel as well, you'll find the Yaldei HaGva'at, Noah HaGva'at, whatever they call them. You'll see these kids, long payas, beards, tzitzit sticking out. They are, it's mamish neo-chassidut in the full sense of the word. I don't know, I must be failing because all my grandchildren are very normal. I don't have, all right, a movie producer, but they're all normal when it comes. Each one is in Hester, that Hester, another Hester, etc. But I look and I see these children and I have nachat, I mamish have nachat. Now, then we went into the sixth Rebbe, we read the memoir from Rebbetzin Hech. And there's no question that my description of America before the Rebbe is correct. And finally, Rakefet, and what gives him the right to speak. And I quoted to you from Alan Dershowitz, and believe me, he's not in court now representing O.J. Simpson. He has no reason to forge the facts. And Tzvi Groner. That's Tzvi Groner. I'll tell you another story about Tzvi Groner. He was a fabulous baseball player. He was one of the best baseball players in Borough Park. He dreamt of making the major leagues, and that's why he concentrated on pitching. Because he reached the conclusion that the only way to be a Shomer Shabbos is to be a pitcher. If you're a pitcher, you don't have to play every day. So he dreamt of being a pitcher, and that's the way he would make the major leagues. Okay, this is, I want to give out, this is very fascinating, Malachim Torah V'Das. Again, I love these websites. They make fun of yours truly, but to say that I can handle it, everyone thinks they know better. But it's interesting. This is about Springfield, Massachusetts. Anyone interested? This is the Munkacha with the source Xeroxed about studying Tanya. This is someone who did a search on Malachim. You'll find it interesting what comes out of here. And I guess no one wants the pictures of the special children, but if anyone does, the show Sara Netanyahu as a mensch. And this is from David Newman,
of the research on the use of municipal water for a mikveh and a case study of the Seattle rabbinate in the 1950s. My dear students, I wouldn't miss next Sunday's class, which is entitled, Can You Keep a Secret? And that's what we're going to talk about next Sunday. And I wouldn't miss next Monday's class for all the ammunition that has been smuggled into the Ukraine, even though they claim there is a peace treaty. And I have to tell you, it is beyond words what they did to the Christian Coptics, slaughtering 21, posting it on website, beheading them, and issuing a warning to the Christian world, you are next. My only question is, does Obama understand what is happening?
He's one of them.
May God have mercy. What America has gotten itself into. Until we meet again in health and happiness, and with best regards to all those listening across the wide expanse of the universe, Das Vidalia. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, first push it in that it should go off, and then take care of it.
How God works is they have this whole system. They have classes, Amish classes, 3, 4, 5 kids in a class.
And where are these classes held?
The classes, there's in New York. Chabad has developed their own software. They have teachers who, sitting in New York, trained to teach classes over the internet. They have software where the teacher sees each kid and each kid sees the other kids in their class. They have regular schedule hours.
Interactive.
And it's interactive. That's why it's only 4 or 5 kids at a time. Wow. And they have the special teachers. And it depends where it is in the world. So the teachers, it all comes out of New York. The teachers in New York, I mean, not everybody teaches. Everyone teaches their class or two. Depends what time they can be. 3 in the morning, depending on where the other class is. These kids come and they sit and they have their whole classes for 4 or 5 hours a day. Starting from Gan, they send out beforehand to the parents, you know, the pictures to color and the class material. And these kids get to be friends. They come and meet together once or twice. They bring them together physically so they can meet. And this is the way, until they get bar mitzvah, when they have to send them away, this is how they learn. And they're in a regular class.
And this is fairly new, because 10, 15 years ago they didn't have
No, this. I don't know exactly when it started. I mean, I've been in the houses in different places. I've been in the Shlichim houses in different, some have big Chabad houses, but in small places.
I remember being in Hawaii many years ago, and before this, and they said that the kids went from the time they were 10, 11, and they went to live with the grandparents.
Yeah, yeah.